Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hey, Driven Woman, and welcome back. You know, the more women I talk to, the more I realize that just about all of us have issues with money. We either aren't earning enough, are living beyond our means, are caught in the trap of student loan and/or credit card debt, or are terrified to ask for what we actually need to float our boat. Sometimes all of the above. And this doesn't even begin to cover the fact that most of us also grew up hearing all manner of money nonsense from our parents and other adults that virtually guarantees we will not have an easy time improving our relationship with money without a lot of self-awareness and work. It's complicated, all right. So I invited speaker and writer Melanie Lockhart. Melanie is the author of the best-selling book, Dear Debt. She's also the host of the Mental Health and Wealth podcast and a woman who has learned a thing or two about money the hard way. Melanie is also the co-founder of the Lola Retreat, which helps bold women face their fears, own their dreams, and get in control of their finances. Melanie is passionate about empowering women, helping others get out of debt, and mental wellness. And I'm sure you can see the connection between those. Here are a couple of highlights you're going to hear in this lively interview. How Melanie became known for something while growing into something else. Getting hired as a money mindset coach when she didn't even think she was one. Melanie's thoughts on the word expert and how it's currently being used in online marketing. I think this is one of the more enjoyable parts of the interview. And you're also going to want to listen into how Melanie accidentally doubled her rates and got better clients virtually overnight. If you want to connect further with our wonderful guest, Melanie Lockhart, the links to everything you might need is in the show notes, including her website, her retreat, her podcast, her book, her Instagram handle, and all that jazz. So you're definitely going to want to lean in, maybe take some notes, because if you're a woman and you make money, you've probably got a relationship that could use a little work. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about. So lean in and enjoy. Well, Melanie and I are reconnecting after several months in between when I appeared as a guest on her podcast. And we've been having some very interesting conversations about the intersections between money and what makes you an expert and being known for something that you kind of never would have hoped for or planned on, being visible, being vulnerable, taking care of yourself, and all of the above. So I can't wait to get into a deep dive with this. Thank you for being here today, Melanie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and chat with you. It's always a pleasure.
Well, let's just jump right into the big topic that became the title of your book and the thing that you became known for. And because I do happen to be the parent of several millennial children, I gave my kids the very same advice that you got, that you followed, and that actually led to you becoming somewhat famous: student loan debt. So let's start with your story and take it from there.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, I was told to go to a good school, go to college, get a master's degree, and get a good job, and it'll all work out, right? And so I, you know, got my bachelor's in theater. And then after that, I was working in arts education in Los Angeles as an arts director and had a very wonderful job. And actually, my job took me to New York to meet with people from NYU because we were going to bring some of our students there. And while I was there, I thought, I wonder if I should get my master's degree. It had always been on my bucket list, and living in New York had been on my bucket list. And so I decided to apply, and I got into the performance studies program. And I remember seeing the price tag. It was $52,000 a year. It was a one-year intensive program. And I was like, that is more than I make per year. At that time, I was making $38,000 as an arts director at a nonprofit in Los Angeles. And I just remember thinking, I have $13,000 left on my undergrad loan, which I just kind of treated like a bill and didn't bother me that much. But then, am I going to quit my job and triple my debt load and get into so much more debt? Well, I did. And believe you me, so many people had told me ahead of time, like, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to get into this much debt? No one could have told me anything, I promise you. Like, so I just want to say that out loud because, you know, a lot of people who might be thinking, should I go to grad school? Should I not? No one could have told me anything. People tried. I was very stubborn and was fixated on this idea of going to my dream school, living in my dream city. I was going to make it happen no matter what. And I did. And so while that part was great, I could check those two things off my list, get my master's degree, live in New York. You know, you have this kind of short-sighted thinking and you don't really think of, well, what is it going to be like to graduate and not necessarily find a job right away? What is it going to be like when my minimum payment is now $900 a month? What is it going to be like when I'm struggling to make this all work? And so after graduating, I was going on interview after interview after interview, like 30 interviews in New York to find full-time work. And I couldn't find full-time work. And after 6 months, my grace period was about to end and I was going to have to pay my student loans. And I had this realization that I can't afford to live in New York and pay my student loans. And so to make a long story short, I moved to Portland, Oregon to be with my then partner. And I was like, okay, I'm going to cut my expenses. I'll be a big fish in a small pond and it'll be great. It'll be a fresh start. Portland's economy is much smaller. And so I could only find about $10 to $12 an hour temp jobs that first 2 years in Portland. And I had a brief period where I was on food stamps. And I remember, you know, the first 3 months in Portland, I was making $10 an hour as a temp admin assistant at an arts organization. I was on food stamps and I was like, this is not what I dreamed of when I quit my nonprofit job in LA to uproot my life in New York, to do this long distance relationship. And now I have all this debt. Now I don't even really have a great job and I'm making much less. It's like we have this idea that when we take big risks, that things will just go up, 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 right? We have this very linear version of success, but P.S., it never goes that way. I think we really need to reevaluate how we think life and success happen. It's definitely not linear in any kind of way. So, you know, I just thought, but I did these steps. How come I, you know, didn't find a better job at least making 50K or 60K? Like literally this was my goal, to make 50 or 60K because the highest salary I had ever earned before that was 38. And so I was like, I thought my master's degree would at least get me to 50 or 60,000. And this was like the dream salary for me at the time. And I just remember being so depressed and so ashamed. And so pretty much all of 2012, I was stuck in this spiral of depression and shame and guilt. And it was very much situational because of my student loans. And that led me to personal finance blogs. And so I discovered that there were all these amazing personal finance blogs with people sharing their personal story about getting out of debt, about, you know, paying off their credit cards, about all these things. And while I was so inspired by these blogs, I felt like, okay, but these people are downsizing. I'm a minimalist. I have nothing to downsize. These people are selling their stuff. Once again, I'm a minimalist.
I don't have anything to sell.
You know, they had spending problems, like with credit cards. And I was like, well, I don't have a spending problem. I have student loans. And so, and no one also was talking about the emotional relationship to debt and the mental health impact. And I was like, I'm seriously affected by my debt right now. Like, I feel like there's an elephant sitting on my chest. I feel sick to my stomach. I feel like I can't quite breathe until I pay this back because I don't like people holding things over my head. And so I feel like as long as I owe somebody, I'm not going to be free and clear. And, you know, it wasn't until years later that I realized the reason I was so depressed paying back my debt, especially for so long, is because debt tethers you to the past. You are literally paying for your past. And so when you're trying to move on in the present and plan for your future, it's really hard when you're literally making a payment to the past. And so I started my blog, Dear Debt, on January 3rd, 2013. And the Dear Debt concept is kind of based on the Dear John letter concept where you break up with debt. And so I have all of these wonderful breakup letters to debt. You know, Dear Debt, I'm over you. We're breaking up. I would write monthly posts about my debt repayment journey, about how much I put towards debt that month. I would also share my side hustle adventures. I was doing all of these random side hustles to make extra money. I was selling water bottles at raves overnight. I was being a brand ambassador and walking invisible dogs as part of a promotion for a new Petco that opened up in the neighborhood. I would be a coat check at a Halloween party. Like, I was doing all of these random gigs and I would share about, you know, my journey on there. And it built this community of other debt fighters who were paying back their debt. And they were like, I feel the same way too. And so many people were saying, I feel this way about my debt as well. And I realized that no one was really talking about that. And so, you know, while other blogs focused more on the tactical, here's how to earn more, here's how to improve your credit, mine was very much a personal story. Mine very much focused on the emotional, mental health impact of paying off debt. And it created this community of other people. Mm-hmm. And to make a long story short, that eventually led to a book a few years later. It led to a self-employed career, which I still have to this day, 7 years later. And it helped me pay off my debt because I was able to leverage that blog into a writing career, which earned far more money than I knew was possible, which helped me pay off my debt. So it's been a very weird, long journey, lots of ups and downs. But yeah, as you kind of mentioned, sometimes you have these things happen to you that you're like, oh, wow, I never would have seen it, you know, lead to this place, but it's unexpected and comes along with the good and the bad.
I really appreciate you taking the time to share the story. And, you know, what I think is most poignant about it, Melanie, is that you did everything right. You were a good girl, like so many of us. And you wanted to have a career in nonprofit, which means you're not a money grubbing, you know, person who wants to be wealthy and famous. You wanted to have a career in the arts and you wanted to have the proper education. And that's all modest and humble. So we don't usually think about people getting into debt problems when they're modest and humble. We think about people getting into debt because they're greedy, because they're impulsive, because they are into acquiring things, because they, quote unquote, live beyond their means. And as a minimalist, your means were pretty modest. And so it's a story that I think is really important. And I think the fact that you focused on the mental health aspect of it and the relationship that you had with debt, because that's obviously crucial. I work with female entrepreneurs and we all have money stories. Now, I know some of the work that you do now is money mindset coaching, which is also something that you kind of fell into and didn't intend because we have a relationship with money. And oftentimes it's a relationship that goes unexamined until something goes wrong. Like, what do you mean I'm in debt? I don't even wear makeup. Like, what do you mean I'm in debt? My car is like 10 years old and I'm well educated. Like, this isn't supposed to happen to me. And yet, if you played the victim card, which is kind of my biggest pet peeve, you would probably still be in debt and you would probably still be stuck in the past and feeling sorry about yourself. What you really just wanted to do is like, wow, never expected this to happen. I know I'm not the only one. I need to walk and talk myself out of this, and maybe I can help some other people along the way, and look what's become of it. Now, what's fascinating also is that you have a career as a freelance writer, and that was not your intention at all, and yet no. You love it. But your money stories, as we usually have more than one, yeah, you have Dear Debt, you broke up with debt, you became known for your debt story, but you had another money story that almost convinced you you didn't want to be a writer anymore after several years. Let's talk about that one.
Yeah, you know, over the past few years, you know, I've been writing about personal finance for so long, and I've written so many of the same topics again and again and again. I've written for many different clients over the years. And while I love writing about finance, like many people, I started getting really burnt out. And, you know, I've had this stage of burnout at various times. So actually, when you were talking, I realized I definitely had this instance about year one, because year one, I was charging very low rates. So to give people an idea, I started writing for other bloggers initially for $25 to $50 an art for a blog post. So I was like, oh, great. You know, this is good side hustle money. And, you know, I'm writing for other bloggers. And then I got that up to $100 a blog post. But then when you become self-employed, you're like, wait, how many articles do I have to write to make a living from this? And so it was about a year into it that I realized I will have to create so much at this rate to just have a viable basic income. And so that's when I realized that I have to shift away from working with other bloggers and work with actual fintech companies and banks, which they have the money, they have the budget. And so instead of making $25 to $100 a blog post, then I started making between $200 and $400 a blog post with these banks and fintech companies. And that was much more doable. And, you know, that kind of rate had stayed the same for a while and, you know, felt much better than before. And of course, there are differences between blogs and articles. There's totally a difference between writing for other bloggers and actual companies. We don't need to get into that, but suffice it to say, you do what you need to do to get that higher rate, right? And so then, you know, during COVID, I think a lot of us just kind of hit that burnout wall. And I was like, oh, do I want to be doing this anymore? I'm writing so much. And I was looking to kind of pivot away, like, how can I get out of this? And it wasn't until I started earning more that I was like, maybe I don't hate writing. Maybe I was just feeling like I wasn't valued and I was starting to resent what I was making. And what had happened was I'm in this freelance writers Facebook group with a bunch of other people. And a lot of us share certain clients, certain leads. We talk a lot. And a male colleague of mine in that group had said, oh, I got contacted by so-and-so and they said yes to X rate. And it was almost double what I had been charging. And I was like, oh my gosh, I heard from that same person and they offered me much lower.
Oh,
and so I went back and I was like, hey, you know, unfortunately, this will not work for me. And I thought that was that. And then they came back and they were like, well, if it's about the money, like, let us know. We could rethink it. And knowing what my other friend was making, I was like, well, I would need this to get started. And they said yes. And so it was so interesting. And this has actually happened twice in my career where men have shared information about rates that have changed the trajectory of my career. So that was one that happened recently where I was like, oh my gosh, because I know they said yes to this, then I feel more empowered to ask for the same. And I got it and it was amazing. And this actually happened about 5 years ago. Also, I had an editor who was like, you can't tell anybody this, but you're charging far too little for this. This is really great work. Like, you definitely need to be asking for at least 50 cents a word or more. And at that point, I didn't even know that 50 cents a word was possible. You know, I was making 10 to 25 cents a word at that point on average. And so I didn't even know 50 cents a word was possible. And so I just think it's important for people to realize that sometimes we don't even know these other rates are possible, are available, that people are paying that much until someone else tells you. And in these two cases, men had told me what they were getting paid, and it just blew my mind. And I was like, well, if they're getting paid that, then I want to get paid that. And yeah, it completely changed my relationship to writing once I felt like I was being financially compensated in a way that supported the work, that supported my 7 years of being a writer. It's not like I've, you know, just been started with this. I, you know, have been writing for 7 years and I have a master's degree and, you know, have a name in the community.
You have a published book. You speak on stages. Yeah. I mean, it's like, for goodness sake, but we have to pull this apart a little bit because here's the thing. I mean, I think it's, and we talked a little bit before we started recording about how most people don't know the value of something in the marketplace until someone else tells them. It's kind of like, you know, the expression, like whatever the market will bear and what's the market value of this. But I think women uniquely tend to confuse value and worth. And we tend to get a little bit hung up in that where it's like, well, who am I to charge this much? Or, well, what do they think it's worth? And there's so much about this that is, I could get really fired up about. For example, we don't even know it's an option to get paid that much. But who decides the value? I would be very interested to know, did these gentlemen, because I'm going to call them gentlemen because they were generous enough to share with their female colleagues exactly how much they're getting paid. A lot of people don't share. They share all kinds of things. They'll tell you about their sex life, but they won't tell you how much money they're making, you know? And so these gentlemen shared that information, which was a game changer for you. But I would be curious to know, did they determine what their rate was, or was that rate determined by the employer? And the audacity that in whatever year this was, that they were knowingly and willingly offering you considerably less. I'm sorry to say, because you're a female, because you are totally qualified. You are just as much an expert as this gentleman was. Like, how did you even reconcile that in your mind? Did you get mad? Like,
yeah, so it was actually interesting. So the editor several years ago that told me that I, you know, wasn't making enough, I don't know how he came up with that rate, but I'm sure that he was working with other writers who were charging more. And so he just set a baseline and said, you need to be making at least 50 cents a word. And what I've come to realize is that when it comes to medium to high-ish rates, in writing 50 cents to a dollar a word is pretty good, decent, you know. Apparently back in the day, $1 a word plus used to be fairly commonplace, but unfortunately that is no longer the case. But you know, in general, 50 cents to a dollar a word is fairly good these days. But at the time, I did not know that. And so, and like I said, this was year one or two in my business. So I was still stuck at the 10 cents to 25 cents a word kind of average rate. And so that was just a game changer for me. In regards to this other story, it was interesting because this person approached me and gave me this rate that they were going to offer. And I was kind of like, that's a bit lower than I usually accept. And then when I asked him, like, did they offer you that rate or did you propose that rate? He said he proposed that rate and they said yes. And so
that's
what
I'm talking
about. Yeah.
Yes. And Melanie, that absolutely is in alignment with an article in the Atlantic magazine from 2018. I talk about it all the time. I talked about it quite liberally a few episodes back, the confidence habit, because the statistics say that in the vast majority of cases, women accept what they're offered. They do not negotiate. Men are much more likely to negotiate or to name their price. And even when women do negotiate, even when they know that that's a possibility and they are willing to do it, they settle for significantly less. And I think it's because of the way we're culturally conditioned to other people decide our value. We don't get to decide that. But man, to be able to say, this is what it's going to take to hire me, work with me, employ me, you know, take advantage of my services, and then be willing to let that number just sit there for a while they chew on it, as opposed to, well, what are you paying? You know, mm-hmm. That's a game changer. And of course, very scary until you can get to the point where you're like, this is happening. I still have bills to pay and all the years I was undercharging to course correct for.
Yeah. And it's been such a game changer to see what other people are getting paid and then to get paid that yourself and be like, wow, in what other areas am I undercharging or am I not getting the most out of this? And because of that experience, more recently, I had an experience. I had two different experiences that I'll share because I think they're both relevant to this rates conversation. So I had one client that I had worked with and charged $450 as of February of this year. And then they came back this past month and I was like, hey, I'm really slammed right now, which I was. And so I was like, let me just give out a really ridiculous rate that like they'll probably say no, but I'll feel good about because I don't necessarily need the work. And I said, my current rates are $700 for an article. And I was like, they're going to say no. They said yes without blinking an eye. And I was like, I went from $450 to $700 and they didn't blink an eye. And then when I turned in the work, they were like, thank you so much for this quality of work and your professional demeanor, blah, blah, blah. They were so happy with it, which was great. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I thought having a 40% plus increase would like probably not work out, but here it did. But then on the converse, I do want to say I had a different client who I had worked with a year ago, I think at lower rate, probably like $350. And then, they wanted to get in touch with more work. And I said, hey, my current rates are at least 50 cents a word. So either that means you're going to have to increase the budget or we're going to have to lower the word count. And I never heard back from them. So, you know, that was kind of expected as well. So I just wanted to share two sides of the story because both of them happened. Like there's one client, they didn't blink an eye. They were super happy. There was one client that was like, we can't afford you anymore. And, you know, that happened. So I just wanted to share both of those because I think they're relevant to the story.
I really appreciate that, Melanie. And I think, you know, I think a lot of us, a lot of women, female entrepreneurs struggle with raising their rates. I mean, they struggle with everything about money. As I said before, confusing money and worth, declaring what they're offering will cost. Like even just some people, it's like pin the tail on the donkey. Like, I don't know what to charge. I'm just going to close my eyes and spin around and just pick a number on the wall. I hear a lot of money mindset coaches give the advice that we'll start with a rate that you'd be totally insulted on principle. You're like, hell no. And then just incrementally ratchet it up until you feel kind of nauseous, but excited. That's your price. I don't know if that's good advice for everybody or not, but what I do know is we don't get what we don't ask for. Mm-hmm. And you may not be making what you want to make, but somebody probably is. So how do they think differently about what they do that allows that to happen? If they're doing the exact same thing, what's different? And what you mentioned earlier, I think, makes the difference. Once you knew it was possible, and then you knew you wanted it and you were willing to state that and maybe deal with some pushback, you were actually able to fall back in love with writing again because you no longer felt resentful and you were able to work with better clients. And better clients, I think you would probably define as didn't worry about the amount, were happy with what you did, expressed gratitude, and wanted an ongoing relationship. Are there any other variables for you? What makes a better client?
Yeah, I think great clients, you know, appreciate your expertise and value that and state that. They let you do your own thing. They pay on time and pay well. They don't nitpick and nickel and dime about, oh, this or that. And they see the value in what you do. And it's been a total game changer to work with people who are paying me more than I ever knew was possible. And they appreciate me. There's, you know, no conflict. they understand the value that I'm bringing. Whereas I've worked with people for far less and there's always, oh, there's a payment delay or they're nickel and diming me or, you know, this and that. And it's like at a certain level, when you get to people who can pay that amount, all the drama just goes away because they understand that you're a professional and they're a professional. And so it's two people showing up to do their job and provide value. And that has been a complete game changer to me.
And I think you had to become a different writer in your mind in order for that to be possible. I mean, for you, I think this is what's, we're both fascinated by mindset and mental health. And I think what's fascinating to me is once you knew it was possible, it's like, well, I'm just curious if there was another little mental shift where, okay, this is what I could make. And these are the kind of clients I could work with. Like, was it absolute no-brainer? Did you have any discomfort about moving up to the next level? Or did you have to change anything about the way you see yourself to be able to take that leap? Hey there, it's Diane. Whether you are a brand new listener or have been with me from the beginning, I want to let you know how much I appreciate that you take the time out of your week to listen to the Driven Woman podcast. I love knowing that there are women all over the world whose lives are being changed for the better simply by listening to our solo episodes, guest expert interviews, and client success stories. Some of them tell me so in podcast reviews, in DMs on Instagram, and by email. And I love, love, love hearing from them. But you know, for many of us, we are not going to be able to reach our most important goals without guidance, support, and accountability, the kind you get from an expert coach who truly understands what it's like to build a business, even though you're afraid, even though you're uncertain, even though you don't have it all figured out, because that coach has done it themselves and helped other people as well. So whether one-to-one coaching is what's right for you because you want a highly customized approach, or you really prefer to learn and grow and be challenged as part of a group, I've got you. There are links in the show notes. You can let me know that you're interested and we will take the next step together. I promise I will not invite you to work with me unless I think you're ready, unless I think I'm the right coach for you, and unless I am 100% confident that we can blow your mind and rock your world together, because that is the only kind of outcomes that I am interested in creating. So let me know if that sounds right for you. I just wanted to make sure that you knew there is more available to you than just listening to this podcast. But that being said, I'm so glad you're here. Want to know what one of my clients has to say about the experience of working with me? Have a listen to this.
It's funny because at first I said I would never own my own practice. And now I own my own practice. And I would say, I'm never going to take it any more than just treating patients. And now I'm thinking about how can I start my own
institute. You know,
yeah, exactly. Even like training other therapists, having a certification with my name that I am, you know, I haven't thought of the name yet, but I'm certified in this technique or whatever the case may be. And really just helping other therapists help their patients the way I help mine.
That's a great question. So first of all, I want to say I definitely had to get out of my comfort zone a lot. So actually, the clients that I'm working with right now that are paying the rates that I want are not the topics that I've been writing about for 6 years. They're tangentially related to finance, but I've been writing primarily about student loans and credit and my personal story for 5-6 years. And it's only been in the past 2 years that I really told myself to liven up my writing life. I want to start writing about different topics. So I started writing about mental health. I started writing about music. I started writing about investing and car insurance. And yes, like while those latter two are personal finance adjacent, they weren't the student loans and credit, which I could write in my sleep. And so I had to get out of my comfort zone and say, okay, I'm not an expert in these fields, but I can write about things that I don't necessarily know very well because I know I can do the research and I know that I can provide the sourcing needed to make sure that it's accurate. And so I had to get out of my comfort zone and try out new fields that people believe that I could do, even though I didn't have the experience to show for it. And so I think that was a huge mental shift for me because my mind wanted to be like, but I've never written about this. Why am I going to get paid when I've never written about this? And it's like, well, I haven't written about this specifically, but I've been writing about finance for 6-7 years. So even though it's not exactly what I've been writing about, this is a new challenge and a new opportunity. And I think it's important for female entrepreneurs in particular, when you get an opportunity that your body is screaming, this is outside of my comfort zone, to say, this is a challenge and an opportunity. And so whenever I have that kind of fear brain get activated when I'm writing an article, I'm like, here's what you're doing, Melanie. You're getting paid to learn about this topic. How cool is that? You know, so instead of freaking out about like, oh my gosh, I don't know anything. What am I doing? They're going to find out I'm a fraud. Ah, I'm like, you're going to get paid to write about this topic and to learn about it. How cool is that? You love learning. You love reading. You spent all this money on school. Instead of spending money on school, now you're going to get paid to learn and to write. How cool is that?
I love the reframe. And I think there's a subtopic, a subtext here that is just begging for us to explore, which is the nature of expertise. I mean, where this conversation starts and the nature of what makes someone an expert. You got into all the debt that led to the blog, to the book, and to, you know, you becoming known for that and now beyond that, because you drank the Kool-Aid. You went to the good college with the high price tag because you believed there would be a return on investment that there didn't turn out to be. You didn't do anything wrong. You did everything right, but you still wound up with all the debt. And the reason we do things like that, and the reason why I advised my children to do that, but I wouldn't do it if I could take these years back and see the way the world has changed in the meantime, is because we think what makes someone an expert and what gives them the right to apply for certain jobs and to have something on their resume is that they have the right pedigree. And I think the world has changed a great deal in the last 20 years where the term expert has a real variable meaning. And I know it's a word that both you and I have some feelings about. Let's dig into that. I'd love to know what you think makes someone an expert. Because when you started writing on things that were adjacent to but not in your wheelhouse, and you got those fraudy feelings that you decided to work your way out of, it's because of this topic of what makes someone an expert. So let's go there.
Yeah, first of all, I really despise the word expert, to be honest, because I think a lot of people slap that label on as a way to give them instant recognition or credibility when it's like there's no consensus among people about what an expert actually means. I mean, we know what it means intellectually, theoretically, but there's not like a framework of like, you know, take these steps and you're an expert. And I think for better or for worse, there are so many different consequences that have come from that. So on one hand, I think a lot of women in particular think that they have to go after so many degrees. I have to get my PhD. I have to get this certification. I have to take this class, that they're always searching for that expertise label. So they're just racking up certifications and degrees. But it's like, okay, you've read all the books, but do you actually have experience? Number one. So I think that a lot of people can be chasing expertise by getting these courses, these classes, these degrees, and just feeling like they're always falling short, which I think is a shame. And I think that when we relegate expertise to just, you know, these formal degrees and certifications, that it's a form of gatekeeping in a way, because they cost money, they're expensive, they're a lot of time. But then on the other hand, I think it's far too easy right now, especially in the digital age, for anyone to slap the word expert on their Instagram bio and say, I'm a coach, I'm an expert. And, you know, they don't necessarily have enough experience. But I would like to find somewhere in the middle where we value personal experience as much as we do intellectual discourse and degrees and certifications, or ideally find somewhere in the middle where people do know things, quote, by the book, but they also have real life experience. And so I think people nowadays are starting to come around and realize, I want to work with people who have real world experience, who have real life experience about this topic. And I don't think that that's any less valuable than someone who has a master's degree in said topic or, you know, whatever certification. I think it's really about, do they have the results that I want? Do they have the life experience that I need? Do they have stories and experiences that will benefit me? And I think that so often we think we have to be an expert to do anything. And you know, I was telling you before the call that I had someone approach me for money mindset coaching. And my initial thought was, I don't do that. Like, I'm not a money mindset coach. And, you know, she had told me, I've been listening to your podcast. You talk about money so confidently. You share your story so confidently. And, you know, I was getting hung up on the term money mindset coach, but it really could have just been any other term and I would have felt better about it, right? But then when I realized the results she was looking for was something that I could help her with, I was like, well, I don't have to be an expert at this thing. I don't even have to call myself a money mindset coach if I don't want to, but I can help her in this particular way. And so we've been working together for over a year now, and I've helped her with her money confidence. I've helped reshape her money story, because a lot of those stories we create ourselves and they can do a lot of damage. And I've helped her get some insight into how to talk about money more confidently, how to manage money, how to be more assertive and aggressive with your finances so that you feel like you have a stake in your future. And so I feel like sometimes the term expert, or even just these terms, coach or whatever, can hold us back in a way if we don't feel like we fit all of the boxes. But then when you realize, I don't have to be an expert to provide value, I just have to know more than the people that I'm serving. And my boyfriend actually provides a great reference for this. He's like, imagine that you are a senior in college and you're tutoring a freshman. You guys both don't have degrees, but the senior is providing a lot of value to the freshman. And that's a really great metaphor. It's like, yeah, you don't, both of you don't have degrees, but the senior does have more experience than the freshman. The freshman can learn from the tutoring from the senior. And so I think we can all take a little bit of that lesson, you know, into business and not let this word expert kind of hold us back or define us, and just make sure that we're delivering on the results and the value we provide.
Totally agree. And I actually think, you know, you'll probably chuckle at this. When I first met you, Melanie, I thought money mindset coach was your title, just because I listened to your podcast, I was familiar with your book, and I'm like, oh, she's a money mindset coach, because that's a term I'm familiar with. I wasn't thinking mm-hmm. at all about that's whether you call yourself that or what your specific credentials were, because I think it's the conversation about expertise, credentials, mm-hmm. and it's like, I think what really makes a difference is, what do other people call you? Like, how, because the people, not random people, but like the people you're helping, the people you serve, the people you work with, you know, the people that benefit from your gifts, your talents, your skills, your effort, what they call you, you'd probably like. Like, it may not be the label you would, because they're not getting hung up in any of the imposter issues that we all struggle mm-hmm. with. They're not getting hung up in, oh, who am I? They're not getting hung up in any of that. They're like, this is how she's helped me. I think of her. I've had people call me their genie, their, you know, like, so yeah. You just, it's like, what, how have you helped that person? And also, I mean, mm-hmm. you are actually, one of the things I really like about you is that you're actually pretty modest and pretty humble. I mean, you have a lot of expertise, and you've earned it the hard way. And you also have a freaking master's degree unless the statistics have changed, I think only about 9% of people in this country have a master's degree. So you're actually already part of a pretty elite, highly credentialed group of folks. But your main gig is your freelance content writing. You also do a couple of other fun things that are not as well known that I want to give you a chance to talk about for a minute. LOLA, which I know it's an acronym, but I just love the name of it. Well, anyway, I'll let you tell. Let's talk about your other stuff that you do.
Yeah, LOLA Retreat. And actually, LOLA is not an acronym, but actually an inspiration from, you know, the song, Whatever LOLA Wants, LOLA Gets from Damn Yankees. That's the inspiration, actually. So LOLA Retreat was created in 2017, about a year after my book published. So, you know, my book published, I had paid off my debt. I was kind of like, what's the next chapter for me? Because I'm not going to be, you know, in this debt world forever, even if that is my primary story and how people find me. Like, I want to be moving on. And so women and money was something that I was passionate about, because I just see that women are earning less, we're living more, our relationships are changing. And I think for the first time in history, it's like women are becoming more and more the breadwinners. There's more single parents, as you know, single moms. And it's like, we don't know how to navigate money with these particular circumstances. Like, at no point in history have we had to deal with this. So it's like, you know, we're used to kind of, oh, the man makes more, or women may stay home. But like, all of these stories that we've grown up with have completely changed. And so it's like, how do women navigate money if they're the breadwinner in their heterosexual relationship? How do women provide for themselves if they are a single mom or they want to have kids on their own? How do women deal with divorce? Because women can easily fall into poverty after divorce. How do women prepare for the long term? Because women are living longer. And so these were some of the issues that I wanted to address through LOLA. So LOLA Retreat was an in-person event that I did four times in LA, New York, Portland, and Seattle from 2017 to 2019. We had about 60 women as part of the retreat each weekend. And it was a full weekend of just learning about money and investing. And, you know, we had lots of different topics that I helped curate, you know, depending on the city and depending on the speakers. Like in LA, we had this topic about why diet culture is making you broke. In Seattle, we had an estate planning workshop on, you know, all things related to death and money, which I know isn't sexy, but it's necessary. And so you know, it was such a great experience. And then, you know, I had been kind of really burnt out doing two events in 2019. And so 2020, I was like, I'm going to take a break. I had already planned that. And then we know what happened with 2020 and what's still happening now. And so, unfortunately, the future of LOLA Retreat is still a big question mark for me. I can't possibly fathom planning an in-person event right now. And I did do a virtual event with my other kind of project, which is mental health and wealth. So the other thing that I started January 2020, which is so ironic and interesting, because I launched mentalhealthandwealth.com and also the Mental Health and Wealth Show, my podcast, in January, February, 2020, right before the pandemic, right before, right before these two topics, mental health and money, would literally hit everyone. And so that's what I've been focused on the past, you know, year and a half. And in May of this year, I created the Mental Health and Wealth Summit, which was a five-day online event with speakers about money mindset, about spending triggers, about ask a financial planner, so many different things. It was a really wonderful thing. As much fun as it was, I prefer in-person events. It was a lot of work to produce this online event. And, you know, but I'm still doing the podcast. And so, yeah, like my other two side projects and babies are LOLA Retreat and the Mental Health and Wealth Show. Like I said, the event is a question mark right now. The podcast is still going strong. But, you know, I think women and money and mental health and money are two topics that I'll always be passionate about. Whereas, you know, debt was a particular time in my life, a particular, you know, slice into that version of me. Whereas like these two topics, I'm always going to be passionate about. And I think there are so many different angles to approach them from. And they're just, you know, what I'm passionate about these days.
Well, you stay passionate about those things because we have a lot of overlaps. We both care about women. We care about financial security and empowerment for women. We care about mindset and mental health. We both believe that entrepreneurship is a legitimate, viable path for women to secure Yes. their own well-being and that of their family. And everybody has money mindset issues. And the ones that don't realize it, it's holding them back. So you keep Yeah. talking about this. You keep sharing about this. And, you know, I lived in LA all of my life till just a couple of years ago. I'm now in Portland, Oregon. So we have some of the same stomping grounds. If you Yeah. do Lola again in Portland, I promise you, I will either be there as a participant or a speaker because it sounds like it's something that very much needs to happen. And who knows when the world is going to open back up again. But for this type of event, I agree. In person, there's going to be so much of a pent-up demand. And there's something mm-hmm. so powerful about women sharing their stories and being able to hug each other
yeah.
in that moment of vulnerability that you just can't come close to that with a podcast or a summit or anything like that. So I am there to help you support that and promote that. And, you know, when the time is right, make it happen.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, this was a very valuable conversation. I'm so glad we got a chance to make it happen. And I'll make sure that we link to your website, your podcast, anything you want people to get from you to be on your email list. And what is your favorite social media platform where you would like people to follow you?
I'm most active on Twitter and Instagram at Melanie Lockhart.
Yay. Okay, awesome. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman Podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.